welcome to Just Bugs, an appreciation podcast for those oft-ousted creatures we humans call bugs, despite their official classifications. I'm your host, Savannah, and today I have my co-host, Matt, with me.
I'm here, and I'm ready.
We had a whole thing right before this. He said that, and then I rolled my R, and he can't roll his R, so he pretended to for some
long. Yeah, you have to try, and then I'll try.
Ready.
Ready.
It's so good. Oh my gosh.
We found something that I could not do that
I'm
you can.
I'm crying. Oh my goodness. So good. This is funny because I am terrible at everything and he can do everything. So this is just like so good to me.
Yeah, you can't even blow a bubble.
I could blow a bubble.
With gum?
Or, yeah, no, I can do that.
You can't whistle.
No, I can't whistle.
Yeah, you can't whistle.
That's really embarrassing. Anyways, today is a... Okay. Today is a very special listener request episode. This one is on stoneflies. Do you know stoneflies?
No.
I didn't
either. I imagine rock and fly.
Like rolling stones?
No, like a rock and a fly.
Oh, okay. That makes sense. Yeah. Well, it's not quite that, but it is very interesting, and I'm very thankful for Elizabeth C., who requested this episode, because it taught me a lot about a very cool buggo.
Yeah, thanks for sending it in.
Yeah, so she actually wrote us a little email. It says, hello, okay, while I would literally love to hear y'all chat about any single benthic macroinvertebrate ever, or really any bug, I'm going to choose one for now. And just in case you don't know what a benthic macroinvertebrate is.
Of course I do.
That is an aquatic animal without a backbone that you can see without a microscope. So like a bug or a crustacean or a worm.
The water bugs.
Yes, water bugs. Yes, correct. Know. Yes. So she continues, I would like to listen to a podcast covering stoneflies. They are super cool. They are so cool and cute and so, so beneficial. Or if that isn't in your interest, maybe Dobson flies and their larval form, Helgrammets. Yes, that's it. Those are super awesome buggos too. Thanks for the great thanks for all the great podcasts. I'll be listening, Elizabeth.
That's very sweet.
Thank you so much for that. And thank you for your request.
We hope you enjoy.
Yes, covering stoneflies for now, but I did add Dobson flies to the list, so I'll cover them in the future for sure. So, the order for stoneflies is Plecoptera.
All right.
The P might be silent, but we're going to go with Plecoptera.
Plecoptera.
There are 3,500 species of Plecoptera, and there are still new species being discovered regularly.
Wow, they're still making them.
They are still making them.
That's crazy.
They are known for being one of the earliest winged insects. Their ancestors date back to the Carboniferous period.
Carboniferous, yeah.
Carboniferous.
That's right.
Yeah, it is. Yes, I know. It started 60 million years ago. Oh, no, 16 million years after the Devonian period, which was 358.9 million years ago.
That's a long time.
It is a long time. And the first earliest true stonefly was from the Mesozoic era, from 252 million years ago to... 60 million years ago, which is includes all the dino times.
Oh, really?
Yeah, so they were kicking
it. Fun fact, apparently dinosaurs didn't live in the Jurassic era, but
Correct. It's
a way cooler name for a movie/book than the whatever you said era. What was that called?
The Mesozoic. There's like three
different
eras.
Mesozoic Park? That's not cool. Come on. That sounds like a museum.
There's like three different eras that the dinosaurs were a part of. But yeah, Jurassic is not super one of them. There were like a couple kicking. But
that's really cool.
It's a much better name.
I mean,
it's much better.
No one would have bought the Mesozoic Park book.
I probably still would have bought it. But Jurassic Park, still better, for
sure. Yeah, way better.
So these are classified as insects. They are 6 to 60 millimeters, which is like a quarter inch to 2.5 inches. So most people think of them as like really large insects, and that's because they can get to that 2.5 inches part, but they're not all huge like that.
Yeah, the video you showed me, they were definitely big boys.
Big boys, mm-hmm. Yes. They can get pretty large for sure. And their color ranges from like dark browns to tans, and some have like orangey yellowy bodies, but their wings are still like a dark gray or like a brown color.
Mm.
Yes. So they've got two large compound eyes, and then they've got 2 to 3 ocelli, which I've mentioned before. It's those simple eyes that usually sit on the top of the head, and they're for sensing light, things like that.
Yeah, they're very cool. The hat eyes, I call them.
Yeah, oh, I like that. If
you
need to get
some sleep, you have to wear a hat.
Hat eyes. I like it.
It's not great, but you know.
I love it. No, it's perfect. So they do have, you know, 4 wings. They've got... Their name, like the oh man, I wish I had repeated it here so I don't have to go back, but I'm doing it and gonna do it anyways. The Plecoptera is actually translates to braided wings in some language that I forgot to look up. Maybe Latin?
Yeah, looking at the picture, they definitely have some patterns into their wings. Maybe that's where I'm guessing.
Yes,
that's where
that is
from.
A very good guess, because their wings are not actually braided. So it's just because
they're not made of hair.
You can really braid other things, but definitely not braided. Just that the pattern on their wings, the veins, appear like a vaguely braided pattern.
Yeah. No, it looks really cool. I like it.
Me too. I like it too. They have the 2 pairs of wings. The hind wings are actually much fatter, like shorter and bigger. It's like...
Fatter, shorter, bigger, smaller.
Not smaller.
Skinnier, wider.
Yeah.
I don't have anything else.
No, okay. Well, there are... Wider and shorter, but bigger. That is the thing. And they kind of like fold like a fan underneath the other wings.
Ooh, that's cool.
But when
cool.
they're spread out, it's almost like dragonfly wings, but the back wings are wonky.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. Yeah, so that's pretty cool. They're actually pretty terrible flyers. And some species of Plecoptera are flightless and wingless, or just flightless. Some of them.
Yeah, it seems a lot of the bad flyers have like family members that can't fly at all. So
correct.
It makes sense.
Yeah, so we're in that territory. It's not to say that they can't fly. Some of them can fly. It's just not super graceful.
And they also look like they have like some kind of antenna, maybe. Antenna.
I was just about to mention antenna.
It.
Yeah, you were literally like right on the money. My next sentence was they have multi-segmented antenna.
Antennae.
Maybe. They look, to me, they kind of look like crickets with wings, but huge.
Yeah, that's a good description. The face is a little different, but yeah, if that thing was jumping towards me, I may for a second be not sure if it was a cricket or not.
Yes, correct. So as far as anatomical defenses go, we like to talk about that. They don't have like a ton, but there is one species that has a chemical defense.
Ooh, we love those.
It's very interesting. It's a Kyrene, and they smell like... almonds, kind of, when you injure or kill them.
Yum.
And that's because...
Put them in cookies.
If you think about things that smell like almonds that aren't almonds, cyanide comes to mind.
Oh.
It smells of bitter almonds. Yeah. Just so you guys know out there, if you're ever eating something...
How do you know?
Because I've, like, watched a lot of true crime. Yeah. So that's how I know. But these stoneflies contain hydrogen cyanide in their bodies that they can...
Oh, so don't eat them?
Don't eat that species. But I don't know if it's actually toxic. Because the thing about chemicals that's kind of confusing is one chemical that contains, like, a piece of another may not be toxic.
Yeah, so,
like,
may not have the same effect.
Exactly.
Things.
I don't know if hydrogen cyanide has that same toxicity that, like,
that's
cyanide
true.
Has.
True.
So, yeah.
I have to ask about something. There looks to be something coming out of this guy's butt. Is that part of him, or is this just a picture thing? Picture problem.
I believe that's a picture problem.
Okay, never mind.
Yeah, thank goodness.
I was like, I wouldn't think this guy has a stinger, but it looks like he's got a stinger.
Yeah, no stinger on this one. Thank goodness. But yeah, the hydrogen cyanide thing, it's an aposematism thing. So it's like a warning. They have those warning colors, like oranges and yellows, like I talked about. And that's sort of like warning predators, don't eat me. And for this species specifically, that's true. Because they're unpalatable. They're not good to eat.
Ew, almonds.
Yeah.
So, I didn't know bugs didn't like almonds.
Well, maybe not. I mean,
or birds. Oh, whatever eats them.
Some stuff probably likes almonds.
Yeah.
Fishes.
Yeah, maybe birds would like almonds. You would think.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I guess it would depend on the bird.
We'll ask one sometime.
Yeah, we'll just ask a bird. Next bird we see, we'll just ask him.
Do you like almonds?
That is what he will say. So this is a cosmopolitan species. So that means anywhere but Antarctica, pretty much. And as we discussed on the
last episode, we have yet to find a bug that lives in Antarctica. So if you find one, let us know.
Yeah, if anybody out there knows of them, I want to cover it. I'm so curious.
I don't think we've Googled it. I'm sure we could easily. But yeah, it's funner to tell us. Tell us.
So the populations, actually, there's this interesting thing. So the populations on the north and south hemispheres are geographically isolated, which means that evidence shows at one point they were together and they have been separated again.
Ooh, I've learned about this in school. Like, And if they're separated too long, they can't mate anymore.
Correct.
Yeah,
that's what that means. So they're geographically isolated. If they came together, I don't know if they could still, you know, do the dirty.
Yeah, mate.
Right. Correct. Mate. Yes. Mate. So they actually won't. They've got this really cool thing that they are not that cold sensitive. So they won't fly in cold conditions. They've been seen flying in like when it's like snowy out. But if it drops below a certain temperature, they'll stop flying around, which makes sense. We've talked about like how hot the body has to be for your wings to move, etc.
Before. Yeah. And like I never really thought about it, but anytime you've been in like an area where it's like really cold and there's snow everywhere, like you see like zero bugs.
Right.
So
exactly.
But I never thought about that until we started talking about this stuff. And I'm like, that's interesting. So these guys can be in that scenario.
Yeah. What's really fascinating about them is that they actually are often seen coming out into the wilderness in the dead of winter, like in the winter, or as a sign of like spring coming. So when it's very cold out, and they don't do so good when it's really hot out either. So they can't survive at a diurnal max temp of 35 degrees Celsius, which is like 95 Fahrenheit.
Is that body temp, diurnal?
So I'm going to tell you what it is right now, just because like I knew I had to explain that one because I didn't even know what it meant. So a diurnal max temperature is described as like the difference between the temperatures during the day, including weather changes. So like from morning to evening, the whole temperature fluctuation throughout the day. And
just daytime or including night?
I think it's including night, like in a 24-hour period. And that does include like the changes in the weather.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So yeah, if that, you know, difference comes out to be 95 degrees and they can't survive there.
Hmm.
Which is, you know.
Pretty cool.
You're like, science.
No, yeah. I was just thinking about how we have very radical temperature changes where we live, but I don't think it's that high.
No, I wouldn't assume so. But yeah, so they actually do prefer it to be colder.
Hmm.
Yeah. Yeah.
Interesting.
Pretty interesting. For a bug, I think it's fascinating.
Yeah.
So what do they eat? They're actually most often herbivorous. So usually just eat plant matter. But that's not to say that all of them do. So most of them feed on algae and leaves that sink to the bottom of the lake, etc. Whatever body of water that they're
in. Does that mean they swim?
The nymphs do. Oh. I'll talk about it a lot for sure. But they also very importantly eat decaying plant matter. So they eat, you know, detritus, which is very important.
Yeah. The earth cleaners. Good job.
Yeah. Exactly. But they do sometimes eat smaller insects as well. And both the nymphs and the adults eat like this. So if the adults eat, they eat mostly vegetarian.
Pretty good.
Yeah. So, reproduction! We've reached it.
Yay! I guess.
So, the mates find each other through drumming. I don't remember what other species we covered that does this.
Oh, man. It's been a lot recently, I feel like. But, yeah, they, like, tap on the ground, or they tap on someone else's web, or whatever.
Yeah. So, the males are the only ones that do this in this species, or in this order. What they do is they'll tap or scrape or rub their abdomen on like a rock or any other hard surface, really.
Ooh, I'm imagining like those fish that you scrape in music class with like the stick.
Yeah.
What
are those called?
I have no idea. Why was it a fish?
Because fish are cool, I guess.
Yeah, but
I don't know. It's not important what it's called. But yeah, it's sort of like that.
Yeah.
And they are doing this to attract a lady. And that only will attract a mate of the exact same species. So it can't be a different Plecoptera.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it has to be the same species or else they're not going to be interested.
Mm. Oh, well, yeah.
Right.
I thought you were saying like they could tell the difference between the scratchies of what species.
Well, I think that they can. I mean, otherwise, how would they not be interested?
Mm.
Yeah. So like the taps and the scrapes, it's just not the same.
I see. Morse code.
It's like Morse code. Some species do something else that I thought was adorable. They'll do like push-ups to attract a mate.
Now that's another species.
That's like
I think,
human stuff?
Yeah.
Yeah. Or another slightly human thing, they will sway to and fro, like dancing, kind of.
Ooh,
just nice. Swaying to attract a mate. Very cute.
I mean, it might work. People probably think you're drunk.
Yeah, but let's not get into that. So the males will try to do this repeatedly. They'll try to mate repeatedly, but the female will only mate once, and then she'll stop responding to the drumming. She's like, we're done. You know?
Mm.
Yeah. So once it's time for the things to happen, there's no spermatophores left anywhere. Things happen directly.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah.
Great.
So great. So the life cycle, the females can lay up to 1,000 eggs. That's so many eggs. I'm always so, like, impressed with the amount of eggs that these insects are just, like, dishing.
Yeah, that's crazy. Like, what is it to them? Is it, like, you know...
I think it's a numbers game.
Like, is it, like, the equivalent of us in, like, a cup? Like, I don't know how much 1,000 eggs to their size is.
I don't know. I don't know how big the eggs are.
Yeah,
I guess I could have looked that up. But they do come in, like, large masses or, like, pellet formations. The females will fly over the water and, like, drop them in.
Oh, like a dive bomber? Like,
yeah. Yes. Yes, but with eggs. And then if they're not very good flyers, which we know a lot of them are not, they will hang from a plant above the water and kind of just, like, submerge their butt into the ground. Not the ground, into the water, and, like, drop them in that way.
Hmm.
And then some species will actually, like, fully submerge, swim to the bottom, and lay them.
Really?
Yeah.
Very interesting.
I also thought that was interesting. But the eggs have, like, a sticky coating on them to adhere to the underwater surfaces. They don't float away.
Oh, good. Natural glue.
Yes, exactly. Natural glue. Yeah, I love that. So if the conditions are acceptable, they'll hatch in 2 to 3 weeks. And if not, then the species will actually undergo, like, a diapause and wait for the conditions to be wetter.
Diapause meaning, like, a waiting...
Yeah, thing? Like a waiting thing for conditions to be correct.
And that's waiting before eggs are deposited or before they hatch?
Hatch. So oh. The eggs are hatched, or the eggs are laid, and then they'll wait for the conditions to be right outside before they hatch.
Yeah, I wonder if they stick, like, a foot out just to see, just to feel it a little
bit. I don't think so. But we see that a lot in insects, not so much with, like, the underwater stuff, but we see it a lot with, like, overwintering, because a lot of eggs will go through diapause overwinter so that they don't, you know, die when they
Yeah, that's hatch. Crazy. Imagine if we could, like, be like, oh, it's the conditions are just not right to have a baby, and then that your body just doesn't.
That would be so much better, Matt.
Probably.
There would be so many.
But then everyone would be, like, purposely in places where you couldn't, like, have babies.
We would just have, like, huge amounts of babies and then no babies at all, or, like, areas.
No, people would, like, move to, like, a cold place and then, like, never have babies or something.
That's fine.
Yeah, I guess. And then you're on vacation and oh no!
Oh no! Oh no! That's hilarious. Anywho, the nymphs are fully aquatic, so when they're in their nymph form, kind of like dragonflies, they stay underwater the whole time. Can't survive above the water, because they breathe with gills.
Really?
Yes. There is one exception to this as well, though. So there is some terrestrial nymphs in New Zealand, and they live, like, in extremely humid environments.
It's always New Zealand. They got all the weird stuff.
They got all the cool stuff. We
yeah,
gotta go
cool.
to New Zealand, man.
Right?
Anywho, they live in the benthic zone of freshwater bodies, so, like, lakes, streams, rivers, etc. That benthic just means, like, the lower section of a body of water. Yeah.
Very nice.
So, the nymphs look like the adults, but they often have, like, gills for breathing, like I mentioned. Sometimes the gills are on their butt.
I can't imagine a bug with gills. This is tripping me out right now.
Really?
What?
It's okay.
I didn't know other things had gills.
Yeah, lots of anything that lives underwater pretty much is going to have gills.
They could have been breathing air and holding their breath. Like a
That's
turtle.
That's true. That is true.
Or, wait.
Yeah, turtles do that.
Whales did that?
Yeah, whales
yeah,
do that
yeah,
too.
That's right. I knew.
Blow holes.
Excuse me? No,
sometimes the gills are on their butt, like I mentioned, and sometimes they're on their thorax or behind their head, stuff like that, other places.
Behind the head seems normal.
Yeah.
But less normal.
I like it, though. It's fun.
No, it's good.
The nymphs will live, like, 1 to 4 years, which is a long time.
Is it one of those ones where they're mostly babies?
Yes, yeah. Correct. Yeah. So 1 to 4 years as nymphs, depending on the species, they'll molt 12 to 36 times.
That's so different. I guess depending on how big they end up being.
Yeah, yeah. So it's dependent on the species, how big they get, that sort of thing. Yes, correct.
For some reason, I always think like two siblings and one just gets three times the size. And I'm like, that's probably not right.
That's not it. When they're ready for their final molt, they will emerge from the water, attach to a surface above the water, and they'll do their final molt, just like a dragonfly.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So the adults only live for a few weeks. They will emerge in winter or spring, like I mentioned. And some species don't eat at all as adults. They just emerge, do their business. They don't spend any time trying to eat anything. And the ones that do eat, they will usually eat vegetarian, as I mentioned. They don't usually go too far from where they were born either.
That's so crazy to spend your whole life growing. And then when you're finally an adult, you just don't eat or anything. You just mate and die.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Yeah. Very different than what we're doing. This is why I like this whole podcast in general. Like, I think it's fascinating that a different species that lives on the same planet as us lives a completely different life than us. Like, not even kind of similar.
No, not nowhere near.
That's so fascinating.
And I spend the entire podcast trying to compare it to ours.
Yes, you do. And
very, very different.
So they're often found in swarms. That's probably because they're mating and they all stay in the same area that they were born. So they're not like a solitary group by any means. Are they dangerous? No, they're
unless
pretty
you don't
much
like
harmless.
Almonds.
Well, don't eat them. Well, and then you're good. Solid.
But crunchy.
Also, just the one species smells like almonds.
Oh, I thought you said they all smell like
almonds. No, just the one. Just a Kyrene. That's the only species that has that chemical defense. It's the only one that smells like almonds.
I see.
Mm-hmm. Yes. So, they're harmless. Like I mentioned, the adults don't even normally eat, so their mouth parts are definitely not suitable to bite you.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, and they don't have a stinger or anything like that, despite the picture you're looking at.
It must be a stick in the background or
something. Yeah, it's like a stick or like the back of his leg or something. Who knows? But fish do eat them. Other large invertebrates also, like the hell grammets, like our friend Elizabeth had mentioned. She wanted us to maybe cover Dobson flies in the future. They eat these.
Oh, so she added some connections there for
she
us
did.
To find.
I found them.
Oh, I wonder if we ever had any emails that were like encrypted and we just didn't know.
Oh,
they had hidden messages and stuff.
Now I have to go back through all of our emails. So these guys are, like Elizabeth mentioned, very beneficial. That is because they can't survive in polluted water. So they require very good, well-oxygenated water to survive. So that's a very good environmental cue for healthy water conditions.
So if they're there, water good.
Exactly. Also, because they need that the high level of oxygen, they absorb it through their gills. I also forgot to mention some of the species absorb oxygen. Oh.
Squeaky chair
indeed. Absorb oxygen through their skin instead of gills. So some species are different. They just don't have gills. They just absorb oxygen through their skin. Crazy.
Yeah, that is crazy.
Crazy town. Anyways, got off track there. Also, another reason that they're very beneficial to the environment, besides their social cue of this water's good, is because they consume the detritus consuming detritus will redistribute all the nutrients into the environment so that more things have things to eat. And another good thing about the stoneflies is that when they do eat other insects and things like that, they'll often eat like true fly larvae, which is very good for biodiversity because true flies will actually consume a lot of the different kinds of species and stuff.
What is a true fly?
It's a true fly. We'll get into it another time.
Okay. So wait, does this get the environmental medal for bugs that we have to give out?
It's definitely up there. It's definitely got a medal.
I've had this medal just gathering dust trying to find the right guy to give it to.
Is this the true fly?
You think so?
I think so.
Do you think if I...
The
bumblebee.
Okay. We will temporarily give it the gold medal for now, and then we will reevaluate and we can do a mini-sode where we give the medals.
Or okay. I can pin it through the stonefly into the bumblebee.
Okay. I love it.
Two winners.
For now, I love that. Let's do that. And hopefully your pinning doesn't kill both of them.
Oh, probably not.
Oh, gosh. So some cool stuff about the stoneflies. They got their name because they, you know, lay their eggs on stones and stuff. And the nymphs live their whole water on stones in the water. That's cool, right? Interesting.
The second part, I think you said it wrong. What? Can you repeat that?
Well, the nymphs live underwater on stones.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I think you said the stones live underwater.
The stones live underwater. Oh, gosh. Thanks for correcting me, sir. Another cool fact. At least one species is fully aquatic, from life to death. That's the Lake Tahoe benthic stonefly.
Oh, that's cool. I know that place. I've heard of it.
We've been there.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's good. Pretty good cool. Place. Yeah, there's a guy that lives under there.
A guy?
In the water. Oh. It's a stonefly.
That's so interesting that there's a bug underwater.
Yeah, the whole life for this one. Yeah, so he's one of the only insects aside from halibuts that are purely aquatic and cannot survive outside of water. We covered halibuts. They are a water strider species.
Oh, yes. I like that episode.
Yeah, it was a good one. Get to the water strider.
Get to the water strider!
But yeah, there's about 40 species of those. So yeah, outside of those 40 species of halibuts, this guy is the only one that's all the way through.
Pretty cool.
Chilling in the water.
Although he's not the prettiest.
He's cute.
I like him. He's good.
He's cute and I like him too. One more cool fact. Very popular with fishermen. Fly fishermen specifically.
Oh, why?
Because apparently a fly fisherman will make their little like lure guys. What are those called?
I think lure.
Okay, cool. They'll make their little lure
flies,
guys.
Actually. They might be called flies.
They'll make their little flies to look just like stoneflies. And like I tried when I was looking for a picture for the Instagram, I tried so hard to find pictures of stoneflies and almost every picture was fly fishermen's like little flies. Like almost all of them.
That makes a lot of sense because they're always around clean water, which fish are also a,
you know,
fan of.
Yes,
and
they
so
love it.
You make them look like the bugs that are by the water and then bing, bang, shaboom, you got a fish.
Exactly. Apparently, it's very popular with trout. Trout must love stoneflies because they're really
they like
into
almonds.
It. No, just the one species, I said.
Trout's like almonds. You heard it here.
Oh, gosh. So I do have some shout outs. I didn't get anything for this week's episode just yet for the photo, but I did send some requesties. But I do have the shout outs from last week.
Go for it.
So we've got at Naturefold, which I thought was a very fun and clever little like name pun. Naturefold, like centerfold, you know, but like nature.
Oh,
because photos.
I see. I was thinking like folding nature in half.
Oh, no, not that. Well, anyways, they allowed us to use a beautiful photo of a daddy long legs or harvestman super up close, like very macro.
Yeah, it was a nice picture. I got to
really
look at it.
I really like it.
Good
like
job that with that. Thank you very much for letting us use it.
Thank you so much. And one more. It's Jan Christian photo. Christian with two A's after the T. That's the whole daddy long legs, the whole thing. And he's in like a bunch of like yellowy plants. It's really cool. I like it a lot.
Yeah, thanks for that. It's very good.
Thank you, guys. Thank you to you and all of the other macro photographers that allow us to use their photos. We very much appreciate it. And, you know, it's cool to see them. I just like looking at them.
Yeah, if you guys take any nice photos, send them our way. We wouldn't mind checking them out.
Indubitably.
Probably even give them a thumb. Wait, was it a heart? A heart.
Yeah, it's
Instagram.
A heart. On Instagram,
I was like, going to say thumbs up.
A thumbs up.
I have a question, though. My last question. Have you or maybe me ever seen one of these in person?
I don't know if I've seen one of these.
I don't think so either.
I don't know if they're in Arizona. It might just because it's so hot here in the summer.
That's fair. Because, yeah, we've hiked by creeks and stuff. And there's always things jumping around. But I don't remember if I saw one of these.
I mean, we might just have a small species. Because I know I've seen a lot of, like, flying buggos near lakes here. But they're usually pretty small. So maybe we have a smaller species of stonefly. Yeah. Definitely no big ones here that I've seen, personally.
Well, thank you for indulging me.
Indeed. That's all I've got for you guys today. So let's wrap it up. If you like the podcast, you can rate and review and tell a friend. We always appreciate that. That is the best way for a podcast to get, you know, good or whatever.
To grow.
That's the one, to grow. You can see all of those beautiful macro photography photos on our Instagram at Just Bugs Podcast on Instagram. Also Twitter. I don't even think I'm going to promote the TikTok anymore. It's there. If you want to go look at what we already have, go for it. But yes, those are both also going to be at Just Bugs Podcast. We do have a Gmail for all of your listener requests and listener stories. That's going to be justbugspodcast@gmail.com. Did I forget anything, Matt?
I don't think so. I think that was really nice. Good job.
Thanks, man. Hey, thanks. All right, guys. Well, as always, thank you so much for listening. And don't squish bugs.
Don't squish them. They're nice, mostly.
Sometimes, be yes. Nice. Just don't squish them. It's just mean.
Yeah. You know, if you find a bug in your house and you don't want it to be in your house, just like scoop it up with something and just throw it outside. It'll be fine.
Yeah.
It's better that way.
Yeah, just don't squish them.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys. Bye. Bye.